Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Reading this morning from Canto 5, Chapter 6, Text 17 of Srimad Bhagavatam. We're still in the activities of Lord Rishabhdev. As you can see, this verse is in prose, and I'm not at all expert in chanting like this, so I'm just going to read the translation. Devotees always bathe themselves in devotional service in order to be relieved from the various tribulations of material existence. By doing this, the devotees enjoy supreme bliss, and liberation personified comes to serve them. Nonetheless, they do not accept that service, even if it is offered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead Himself. For the devotees, liberation, mukti, is very unimportant, because, having attained the Lord's transcendental loving service, they have attained everything desirable and have transcended all material desires. Report by Srila Prabhupada. Devotional service unto the Lord is the highest attainment for anyone desiring liberation from tribulations of material existence. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 6:22, Yam labdva chaparam labham manyate Nadikam tata. Translation, gaining this, one thinks there is no greater gain. Unquote. When one attains the service of the Lord, which is non-different from the Lord, one does not desire anything material. Mukti means relief from material existence. Bilva Mangala Thakur says, Mukti Mukhalitanjali Sevate Sman. For a devotee, mukti is not a very great achievement. Mukti means being situated in one's constitutional position. The constitutional position of every living being is that of the Lord's servant. Therefore, when a living entity is engaged in the Lord's loving service, he has already attained mukti. Consequently, a devotee does not aspire for mukti, even if it is offered by the Supreme Lord Himself. So reference is made, I think I'll read from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 6. Chapter 6 is Dhyan Yoga. So the verse specifically is describing the meditational process of fixing the mind. The Dhyan stage is where the mind is fixed on Lord Vishnu. So, yama, niyama, injunctions and prohibitions, the Ashtanga Yoga stages. Asana, pranayama, seating postures and breathing exercise to still the mind. Pratyahara, withdrawing the subtle senses from the objects of the senses. Dharana, fixing the mind. Dhyana, fixing the mind on the Supreme Lord Vishnu. And samadhi is trance. So this chapter 6, it's implied in that stage, fixing the mind upon Lord Vishnu. So that's what's being described. The translation, these Prabhupada has gathered together verses 20 through 23, four verses in a row. One of them is referred to in our purport here. In the stage of perfection called trance or samadhi, one's mind is completely restrained from material mental activities by practice of yoga. This perfection is characterized by one's ability to see the self by the pure mind and to relish and rejoice in the self. In that joyous state, one is situated in boundless transcendental happiness, realized through transcendental senses. Established thus, one never departs from the truth. And upon gaining this, he thinks there is no greater gain. Being situated in such a position, one is never shaken, even in the midst of greatest difficulty. This indeed is actual freedom from all miseries arising from material contact. The soul's being present in the material atmosphere is very uncomfortable. The reverse example is a fish out of water. The water is his natural environment, and take a fish out of water, it's very uncomfortable. He's very comfortable in the water. Take him out of the water, give him amenities, and there's no satisfaction. Put him back in water and he's okay. Similarly, we belong in the spiritual atmosphere. It's a incompatible situation to be in the material atmosphere. It's very uncomfortable, very unnatural. But here we are. The consequence of free will choice. And certain free will choices, you can't just do a U-turn. You say, oh, I don't want to, I changed my mind. Somebody's standing up on top of a building and they're feeling suicidal and they jump off the building. And halfway down they decide, no, I changed my mind. There are consequences for our free will choices which we have to accept. In acceptance of them, the second chapter's message is you tolerate tangstitiksha swabharata. What is it that you tolerate? It gives examples of duality, but like was discussed in the Bhagavad Gita verse that we read yesterday evening, there's the senses and the sense objects, but behind them, the secondary roots of the banyan tree, the ashvat tree of material existence, is attraction, repulsion, and our convictions. But we read also in the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, those convictions also arise simply from the modes of nature. Or in other words, we're like a cork, a piece of light wood floating on the ocean. Once we're in the ocean of material existence, if the wave goes up, you go up. If the wave goes down, you go down. You don't have... I don't want to go up. I don't want to go down. It doesn't matter. If the wave goes up, you go up. The wave goes down, you go down. By dint of material contact, that free will choice that said, I want to enjoy. I want to enjoy the prakriti of Parama Purusha, so I'll pretend that I'm Purusha. I'll be the enjoyer of prakriti. And from that free will choice, here we are, the piece of wood that's bobbing and crashing, rising and falling, as the waves of material existence rise and fall. And it's unpleasant. The atmosphere is totally unnatural for us. How do we extricate ourselves from that misfortune? So chapter 6 of Bhagavad Gita is giving a practice of yoga, dhyan yoga, describing the practice and then where the mind can go, where, because the mind has taken full shelter of Lord Vishnu, then the circumstances don't affect you because you become situated transcendentally by that meditation upon fixing the mind upon Lord Vishnu. And in that position, one can see the self and rejoice in the self and experience a spiritual happiness that can't compare to any material happiness, even when the wave is up. It just can't compare. It's a sublime happiness. And the particular passage from text 22 of that section of Bhagavad Gita that Prabhupada quotes in the purport is Krishna says, having attained this, one feels there's no greater gain. Now, thinking back of Rishabhdev and what he was teaching, because that's the section, he was teaching that position of transcendence. In that position of transcendence, completely rejecting material enjoyment, completely rejecting mystic siddhis, completely rejecting contemplation on liberation. He's the personality of Godhead, so that is his position, but he's showing us by his example and his teachings, that's the position that one should strive for. And having achieved it, the message of Rishabhdev and the message of Bhagavad Gita is having achieved that, there's no greater gain. One feels that. There's a verse in Bhagavad Gita where Krishna is describing the position of struggling against our conditioned material attraction. We've been discussing this in the course of my visit here. Our natural position is to be attached to Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But somehow that misuse of free will has brought the influence of the material energy, and specifically in Kapiladeva's teachings to Devahuti, Jnana Guhaya, the covering of the actual understanding, the understanding of the actual position of the soul, the influence of the material energy covers the soul. And although the soul is paropi, although the soul is transcendental to matter, matter covers the consciousness of the soul. One becomes forgetful by the influence of avidya shakti, the potency of ignorance. It's irony. We don't belong in that position. We're superior to matter, but by trying to be the enjoyer of matter, by the Lord's arrangement, we become covered. And once covered, it's how do you get out? Go this way, go that way, go this way, try this, that. On our own effort, we can't get out. We require this connection with the Supreme to be established once again, and that's what Bhagavad Gita is presenting, that connection once again. So, Rishabhdev has given teachings. We're reading now from chapter 5, chapter 6, going back to chapter 5. He gave elaborate teachings to his sons and to us. And Prabhupada has said in the previous purport, it's perfectly appropriate for all ages, particularly for Kali Yuga, because it's speaking of principle, that the principle of the soul having its rightful position in relationship to the Supreme. So that's the effort. Your question the other evening. Our effort is to connect again with the Supreme. Our effort alone is not sufficient, but we must make effort, and Krishna, seeing sincerity in that effort, assists us and connects us with Him once again when we strive by right means. In the language of Bhagavad Gita, one is assured of success if we strive by right means. So striving to make that connection again is necessary. When one becomes matured in this process of connecting again with the Supreme, particularly through devotion, the influence of avidya shakti is withdrawn. Very much like the description that's found in the first canto, 7th chapter of Bhagavatam, where Vyasadev, under the instruction of Narada, enters into a state of trance, just like described in this Bhagavad Gita reference. He's fixed his mind completely upon the Supreme Lord. And in that state of trance of fixed upon the Supreme Lord, the Lord appears. And the description is, when the Lord appears, he, Vyas, sees that Maya is under the Lord's full control and is behind him. Because normally, Maya, like a cloud, blocks our vision from the Supreme Lord. Like a cloud blocks your vision from the sun. But by the Lord's indication, Maya may, under his control, stand behind him. In the rest of those verses, it describes, because Sakshat Purusham Purnam, Vyas saw the personality of Godhead in fullness, and the fullness of the personality of Godhead is his abode, his associates, his paraphernalia, all of his potencies. He's not alone. He's full in all respects. So literally, Vyasadeva saw the spiritual world. But part of that spiritual world is there's a personification of this illusory potency under his control. And for those who are fixed in their devotion to the personality of Godhead, Maya isn't acting. And that's what's being described in this verse of the Bhagavatam. We're in the material atmosphere. It's unnatural to us. But it doesn't act upon that devotee. Aging is there and pain is there. Birth, death, janma, mrityu, jara, vyadi. They still take place. It's not that you become a devotee and you won't die. You won't get old. You won't get sick. You just become a devotee and it'll never happen. It'll happen. The transformations of material energy take place. We're bearing the consequence of our misuse of free will that brought us here. So you tolerate that situation rather than trying to be the enjoyer or thinking of the suffering of the circumstance. It's just part of the responsibility of having misused free will. We accept that. And refuse to withdraw our consciousness for a moment from the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead in a humble mood of service, staying very faithful to serving him, striving like that. Krishna reciprocates, and the tribulation aspect of material existence just goes to a distance. And we discussed this yesterday morning also, the aspiration for liberation. The aspiration for liberation is the flip side of attachment. It's aversion. I don't like this place anymore. Let me out of here. Attachment and aversion. It's another material dimension. That kind is not... It's neutrality. But it's not the transcendental bliss of loving devotional service. Yeah, I was going to describe a verse from Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says, if you're trying to give up material involvement, but your mind is still dwelling on some object of material attraction, it's not successful. It's pretense. But when pramdrishtvandavartate, when there's a higher taste, then it's very easy to let go of that material attraction. That's what's being described here from Rishabhdev's teaching, in Rishabhdev's example. Here's a very simple example. Children like to play. Right? There's one family, they moved three times just to be in a school district that was a really good school. And they moved from one place to another place. And I asked the son, maybe your age, how do you like, which of the schools do you like? Do you like the new one better or the other one better? I like this one better. And I said, why? He said, there's more time to play. That's the standard of happiness, more time to play. So, let's say a little small boy has a tricycle and he can ride his tricycle for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and come back the next day and ride the tricycle for hours and hours. And then an adult comes along and they sit on the tricycle and they can ride the tricycle for 2-3 minutes and that's it. You can't ride it for hours and hours and hours. It's just doesn't have the same appeal anymore because your standard of happiness is something else. So extend that, and on the one hand you have the attraction of some sense object, and on the other hand you have the transcendental bliss of being fixed in experiencing your relationship with the personality of Godhead. Which one do you want? There's no difficulty in making the choice at all. No difficulty at all. That's the position that Rishabhdev is presenting and offering. And the verse is saying, when that happiness is experienced, even the Supreme Lord comes and offers liberation. The devotee is saying, well, thank you. Because what I want, this is the position of beyond the stage of liberation, is I simply want to be engaged in your devotional service. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings are similar. Mama janmani jamanishvare bhavatad bhakti rahaituki twayi. The prayer is, I'm not looking for anything of this material world, nor am I looking for something of the other world, where I want no more birth and death, and that way take away my pains, and take away old age and death. I want deathlessness. I want eternal life. The devotee, the happiness is so great that if that's offered, I just want devotional service. That means, if you so desire, you have some service for me here in this world, that's just fine. In the world of birth and death, no problem. This is called, in the Bhagavatam's language, Vasudeva Parayana, or Narayana Parayana. It's a nice phrase. In Lord Shiva's interaction with King Chitraketu. You know the story of King Chitraketu from the Bhagavatam. He was a very pious king. Such a pious king that everything in his kingdom was very nice. There was abundant supply of all necessities. Therefore, the citizens were very happy. Because he was very pious, they followed the example of their king, and they engaged in pious activities, and therefore their minds were peaceful. Their social interactions were very natural and peaceful. The king had a robust treasury for the kingdom, and plentiful grains, and sufficient rainfall, and idyllic situation. But as life has it, there's always a problem. And his problem was, he didn't have a son. And he was virtuous king, feeling there's necessity as the king, I must have a son to become the heir to the throne. But there was no progeny. So he married a second queen. And with the second queen, also no son. A third queen, 10 queens, 100 queens, 1,000 queens, 10,000 queens, no son. You think he'd get the message? Not meant to happen. Not Chitraketu. He was very unhappy. So Angira Muni paid a visit to the palace. King Chitraketu, being a very magnanimous, pious king, received Angira Muni so nicely. But Angira, pleased by his reception, could also understand the heart of King Chitraketu. And he asked him in a quizzical manner, you don't look so good. Is there some problem in your kingdom? Are the citizens rebellious? Is there some difficulty with your army? Are they not complying with your requests? It seems to me that all of these... He knew exactly what the problem was. He's just playing with him. What seems to be the problem? And so Chitraketu burst out, "I want to have a son. You're a great sage. I'm sure you can do something. Do some yajna or something. And please." Chitraketu, he could understand, was so attached, there was no point in telling him the obvious. It's not meant to happen. Just accept it. But he didn't say that. He said, "All right, I'll make an arrangement so you can have a son. But the condition is, the son will be both the cause of great happiness and great tribulation. In fact, I'll give him a name right now, Harsha Shoka." Chitraketu thought, "Maybe my son will be a little disobedient. But that's okay. I can live with that better than not having a son." Yes. So Angira performed a yajna. After some time, his first wife conceived a son. Now Chitraketu was very happy. The citizens were very happy. Everyone was very happy. Except the 999,999 co-wives. Because the attention of King Chitraketu just went to his first wife and the son and doting. He completely neglected the other wives. They became unhappy. Then their unhappiness, they started talking amongst themselves. They became very envious. And that intensified over time, and they became so... Envy can be very vicious. They decided, "This child is the cause of our misery. Let's poison the child." So they conspired. And they poisoned the child. Awful. But envy can, and pride and greed and lust, these enemies can drive one to awful activity. They're not to be taken lightly, although it may start something little, a little envy, a little pride, a little lust. But give it some, invest some consciousness there, and it grows very quickly. Becomes a big monster. And then you're fighting a big monster that you created. So they poisoned the child. And when King Chitraketu came to know of this, he was devastated. He smashed. Very timely, Narada and Angira came to the king's palace just at that time. Narada's very gifted in knowing exactly when to appear at the right place, at the right time, and say the right thing, and make it nice again. So, they both imparted transcendental knowledge. And then, in course of time, by hearing from Angira and Narada, King Chitraketu came out of his stupor and realized how foolish he had been. Then he asked them to explain further, and Narada explained further, and then he introduced him to the process of bhakti. He gave him a particular mantra to chant. He gave him the teachings of how to practice devotional service to the Supreme Lord. Angira did that, and very quickly, within short time, he achieved residence on a heavenly planet. And he continued to, being disinterested in the heavenly planet, situation, he continued. Became a topmost Uttama Adhikari Vaishnav. So elevated was King Chitraketu, that he became a friend of Lord Shiva. He was up there. So one time, he went to go visit Lord Shiva. And when he was paying his visit to Lord Shiva, he went on a vimana, and from the air he saw there was Lord Shiva seated, and on his lap was Parvati. So he leaned over the vimana and made some remark. Just see, Lord Shiva is enjoying with Parvati. Parvati heard and cursed him. You think that my husband is ordinary person? You're a big offender. I curse you. You become a demon. Chitraketu heard these words. As Vimana descended, he came before Parvati with folded hands. He wasn't apologetic. He wasn't angry. He didn't say, you know, something to her. He said, "My dear mother, you've misunderstood my intention. I was complimenting that who but a person like Lord Shiva could be in this circumstance and remain fixed in transcendental consciousness. But because you've thought that I was speaking ill of your husband, so be it. Your curse is powerful. I accept." And he circumambulated her three times, got back on his vimana, and off he went. And then, as husbands sometimes have to do with their wives, Lord Shiva spoke strongly to Parvati and said, "It's not that he had offended me, a great Vaishnav, but you have offended a great Vaishnav. Because you've not understood his greatness. Let me demonstrate to you his greatness. When you cursed him, his mind did not move at all. In fact, a person of this caliber," Lord Shiva spoke this verse, "Narayana paraksarge nakutaschana bibhyati svarga apavarga Narakeshu Api Tulyarta Darshanam." Api Tulyarta Darshanam. One sees with equal vision Svarga, attainment of heaven. Apavarga, liberation. Narakeshu, achieving a hellish destination. And a devotee, a Narayana Parayana, a person that's so fixed, like this chapter 6, text 22 verse is describing, or like this Bhagavatam verse is describing, they're so satisfied that if someone says to them, "My dear friend, this evening you're going to heaven," the mind doesn't change. "My dear friend, this evening you're going to hell." Their mind doesn't change. "This evening you're achieving liberation, no more birth in this world." Mind doesn't change. You can't imitate that. If somebody just says something in a harsh tone to you, what to speak of saying, "Go to hell." The mind becomes agitated commonly, or some delightful something happens, the mind becomes happy, or liberation. For a Narayana Parayana, for the person that's being described in these verses, they see them with equal vision. They're not attracted to this or averse to that. If you remember from our Bhagavad Gita discussion yesterday, the banyan tree discussion, aversion and attraction, or attraction and repulsion. It's born of the material energy. It's not of the nature of the soul. The nature of the soul is attraction to the Supreme Lord. This is this Narayana Parayana phrase. And when that is there, what is this one? The pan scale, there's no comparison. It's this one. The other one doesn't. It's insignificant. Insignificant. And Bilvamangala Thakur is quoted, where he also expressed, by being engaged in devotional service to the personality Godhead, there's no care in this world for liberation. I think liberation is standing at my door with folded hands, ready to serve me. But I'm too occupied with my devotional service. I don't have time to go to the door and say, no, thank you. In other words, it's not an aspiration for a devotee. In the 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna described this also. The platform, as is described in the purport here, the platform of devotional service begins from the position of liberation. Brahma-bhuta, that phrase, that verse. Brahma-bhuta prasanatma na sochati na kangsati, neither hankering or lamenting. Samak sarveshu bhuteshu, seeing all living entities equally, seeing all circumstances equally. It's this or that or the other manifestation of the modes of nature, or the absence of the influence of the modes of nature, none of which attract me at all, because I'm attracted to the all-attractive. Madbhaktim labhate param. When it once comes to the platform of devotional service, from the liberated platform, devotional service is executed. That's the message. Let me read Prabhupada's translation of that verse. One who is thus transcendentally situated, Brahma-bhuta, at once realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. He never laments nor desires to have anything. He is equally disposed towards every living entity. In that state, he attains pure devotional service unto me. So that's the teaching that Bhagavad Gita is presenting. It's the teaching that Rishabhdev is also presenting. And this verse is describing one who is situated in that pure devotional service. Whatever it is that is desirable is already attained. One doesn't require anything else. I'll end with just this little side piece. In the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, describing Karma Yoga, Prabhupada mentions that for those who are not devotees, there are rituals that they are obliged to take up. They're enjoined in the Vedas. You must do them. Panchamaha Yajna is mentioned. So it's specific for grihasthas, duties as grihasthas that must be performed. And they're described, that references from the Manu Samhita, where one is obliged. This, that, so many duties. Prabhupada once described in this way, that there are so many duties that the Vedas enjoin that one must perform, that if you did all of them, you would barely get out of bed before it was time to take rest again at night to do all of them. There's so many. Therefore, in this age of Kali, the dispensation is to simply engage in devotional service, beginning with the chanting of the holy names of the Lord. And within that, all things are achieved. Shraddha shraddhe vishvas kahe sudridha nishchaya. Krishna Bhakti. Sarva Karma Krita Hoya. Everything is achieved by achieving Krishna Bhakti. All other duties are met. All other desirable things are achieved. That's the message of Rishabhdev. And naturally so, he's an incarnation of the Supreme Lord, giving that gift. The translation ends, having attained the Lord's transcendental loving service, they have attained everything desirable and have transcended all material desires. It's the material desire that makes the waves of the ocean of material existence up and down, because desires are unfulfilled, desires are fulfilled, and desires keeps churning the ocean. So when there's no more material desire, it includes no more desire for liberation. I just desire the opportunity to serve the Supreme Lord in whatever way He wishes for me. And it's very pleasing to say, it's very pleasing to contemplate, it's another thing to do it. Because circumstances come our way that are uncomfortable. I'm quite familiar with circumstances that are uncomfortable. You have one, I'll match it. You've got your uncomfortable something that you're dealing with. I'll match it with experiences that we each have to face. But if we take full shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that's simply another form of service. And if we maintain that humble mood of service, we can address those things feeling empowered by Krishna to do so. And whatever it is that we do, it's the connection with Krishna, if sustained and maintained, that's our success. And that's our happiness. And things most likely will go in a different direction. But even if they don't go in a different direction, just stay fixed in your devotion to the Personality of Godhead. Narayana Parayana. And whatever comes your way, let me just stay fixed in devotional service to the Supreme Lord. That's my happiness. And there's no other position of happiness I wish than that one. Come to that position. That's the teaching of Srimad Bhagavatam. Hare Krishna. So any comments or question from this morning's verse? Yes, you beat Murari Chaitanya to raise your hand. Go ahead.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, Parvati is not an ordinary woman. She is the external energy of Krishna.
Could you do it again?
Parvati is not an ordinary woman. She is an external energy of Krishna.
Parvati is not an ordinary woman.
She is an external energy of Krishna.
Yeah.
How to understand? How we can understand that?
It's a leela. That's how to understand. Influenced by the Supreme Lord, she acted in a certain way to disclose the glories of King Chitraketu, and gave Lord Shiva an opportunity to point out the glories of King Chitraketu, or anyone for that matter who's just fixed in the Personality of Godhead's loving service. Such a person is glorious. And the Lord makes arrangements to glorify His glorious devotees. And there was a nice service for King Chitraketu to do, and that was to elevate King Indra. So he did that service, in that next life. he elevated King Indra. And he went back to Godhead. But he wasn't wanting to go back to Godhead. He was wanting to be engaged in the Lord's service. And the Lord wants such persons to come back to Godhead. So he brings them. Or he may send them to do some service. And they're fine with either. Is that all right?
Thank you.
Okay. Here we go. I want to come to the liberated platform where there are no material desires. And that's bothering me. And how can I just be happy instead? Well, keep hearing the message of Srimad Bhagavatam and trying to live it. And associate with those that have that spirit, have assimilated that message. Hear from them, serve them, associate with them, chant with them. And gradually that same characteristic which you're expressing will become yours. How is that? Okay. Someone else? Okay. Back in the... Oh.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, you said that a person who tries to give up material contact but still his mind is on sense objects, he is a pretender. So I asked that what should we do in a situation in which we haven't developed sufficient taste for transcendental things and we are in a transformatory phase? So how should we act?
Could you follow? Could you repeat? A pretender. One who has not developed taste or faith in the personality of Godhead. So, what's the punchline of the question? What should one do when one's in the immature stage, basically? You practice. Don't pretend. Let's say, you know the two verses from Rupa Goswami about renunciation, false renunciation, and complete renunciation. Palgu vairagya katyate, where we discussed this the other day. Prapancha kataya bodhya hari sambandhu vastuna mamukshubi pratyago vairagyam palgo katyate. Those things that are in relation to hari, but one gives them up, that kind of renunciation is palgo vairagya. The other is nirbandha krishna sambandhe yuktam vairagya uchate. The principle that's complete renunciation is those things that are in relation to the Supreme Lord. You recognize that they're in relation to the Supreme Lord and you engage them in service to the Supreme Lord. That's the complete form of renunciation. So now we'll go back to your question. I'm this not yet matured devotee, and I feel attraction and repulsion over here. And it's disturbing. So now I have a choice to make. I can just give it up, or I can try to engage myself recognizing this is actually meant for Krishna's enjoyment. I'm not there yet because I'm not matured. But let me contemplate going on that path. According to my strength, spiritual strength, according to my capacity, there are certain things that I can engage in and use them appropriately in service to Krishna. There are other things I don't have the capacity to do. I'm not going to go near because I'll just become drowned in the ocean of sense gratification. But those things that I have the capacity to engage in Krishna's service, I'll do. And as my capacity grows, then I'll use those things in Krishna's service too, but still with great caution. Because I'm not yet matured. In the fully matured, it's not like, oh, now I can do anything, everything. There's always caution about falling prey to the lure of Maya. But in that condition, one can be in many awkward circumstances of life. I don't wish to put myself in those awkward circumstances, but it may come. And when consciousness is fixed in a mature stage, and everything is the property of Krishna, it should be used in Krishna's service, then one can remain undisturbed in those circumstances. So, back to the immature stage. I have my attractions and repulsions. I have my material desires. I'm being self-honest. I recognize that. But here's the spirit. Here's the path out of that circumstance. See things in relation to Krishna and engage them appropriately in His service. So it starts with execution of daily sadhana, and from that comes purification and spiritual strength. Now, the rest of my day, as it unfolds, let me cautiously move forward in accepting those things which I can properly use in Krishna's service, staying away from other things. Two appreciations of Srila Prabhupada for just a moment. In the early days of the Hare Krishna movement in the Lower East Side of Manhattan, Prabhupada was having an informal discussion with the devotees, describing to them the risk and the difficulty of his early days. Because when he first came to New York, he didn't have any money. He didn't have any place to stay. It's not a friendly atmosphere, New York City. He met Dr. Mishra, who gave him a place to stay, but it was an office where there wasn't running water and a place to bathe and a place to use the toilet. Just an office. He had to go down the street and somewhere visit somebody to use the facilities. Very, very uncomfortable for a sattvic personality. It was very difficult. When he came, it was a very severe winter by the time he reached New York City, and elderly body and a very severe... It was very difficult. He was describing some of those difficulties, and he said to the devotees, "You would never have been able to endure this." But the strength that carried him was the instruction of his spiritual master. He said he would because he came on a tourist visa. He knew that at a certain point the tourist visa was going to expire. So he would regularly go to the place, the dock, where the boats would go, and he would look at the schedule of when the boats would be going back to India. But he decided to stay. He was contemplating, this is very difficult. But he decided to stay. And then he got his visa extended. So he stayed. But the hardship was endurable because of the instruction of a spiritual master. That was his shelter. Then another Prabhupada story is, Sansarup Maharaj told me this one. After the temple in New York began, later Sansarup Maharaj was sent to Boston because there are many universities in Boston. And Sansarup Maharaj was very good in that field. So he sent him to become the temple president in Boston. He didn't have a temple, it was like a little storefront situation. So Prabhupada agreed to pay a visit to Boston. He came by airplane. They didn't have a car to pick him up, so they rented a taxi to pick him up. And in the ride back to where Prabhupada's room was, the taxi driver was driving like a city, you know, talking over his shoulder while he's driving, and said, "Hey, you're Swami, huh?" And Prabhupada said, "Yes." "What does that mean? Does that mean, like, you sleep on a bed of nails or something like that?" You know, a Boston taxicab driver's perspective of what a Swami is. And Prabhupada said, "Better than that." He said, "Oh, what's better than that?" And Prabhupada said, "I can be in a room full of naked women and not be disturbed." And the driver said, "Oh." Sansarup Maharaj's comment was, he didn't know what the taxi driver was thinking, what a Swami does. But his point was, you know, without attraction and repulsion to things of this world, not just austerity, endure pain, but not be attracted or repulsed by things of this world. We can't do that. But there were a group of Madhvacharya sannyasis that were watching a video of Srila Prabhupada, the Hare Krishna people or something like that, your ever well wisher. And they saw what Prabhupada was doing in San Francisco at Golden Gate Park, having kirtan with all these hippies dancing around, and they said, "We could never do that." They would never do that, but they were saying, "We could never do that and not fall down." So we should be careful, back to your question, we should be very careful what we try to engage in Krishna service. We should be commensurate with our capacity to engage something in Krishna service, and if we're not careful, we'll fall down. We'll be engaged by the material energy rather than engaging the material energy. But the principle is, each thing in creation has its place. Like Narada. He went into the forest and converted Magari the hunter into a great Vaishnav. We couldn't do that. Or the dacoit who wanted to take all of Narada's possessions, which was nothing, and he tricked him, got him to chant Mara, and became Valmiki. So there are things that we can't do that empowered personalities can do. But according to our capacity, we follow the principle. Detachment through engaging that which is in our hand in Krishna's service. And grow in our attachment to Krishna and detachment from matter over time, following very carefully our practices of sadhana bhakti. Okay. Bindu Madhava's question for the morning. How can we come to the platform of devotional service? I discussed this yesterday. Do you remember the example of how does bhakti begin? Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. The short answer is by association with one who is carrying bhakti within their heart, we then have the opportunity to be engaged in bhakti. They pass on some of their bhakti. They spill a little bhakti on us. And we get benefited like that through association of one who's carrying bhakti in their heart. And by their mercy, they extend some. That's how devotional service begins. But you've got it made. Your parents are already devotees. You just have to know your devotional service has begun. In fact, it's continuing from your previous life. Now your business is, don't make any mistakes. Continue to finish your business in this world and become a nice Vaishnava to help others become Vaishnavas. That's a nice life, isn't it? Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.